Record.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Just Mental Health with Steph and Em, the podcast where we discuss mental health issues from a social justice lens. I'm Emily.
And I'm Stephanie. A quick disclaimer before we get started. We are mental health professionals, but this is not to be taken as professional advice.
We are also aware that our privilege may cloud our perspective on some topics, and we not only welcome but encourage you to message us with criticism and corrections. So let's get started. Today we're going to be talking about mental health memes.
Yes. So I think when we came up with this idea, it was because we'd seen a lot of memes going around related to mental health stuff. And of course they're funny, and it's wonderful that people are talking about mental health more and mental illness and all this stuff. But sometimes these memes are just like not totally correct. And so while they're great for entertainment, you definitely shouldn't take any advice from them or consider them to be, you know, actual mental health advice or evidence-based or anything like that. So we thought this would just be kind of fun to review some of these memes.
Right. And I also think that I like how humor is, you know, becoming kind of a coping strategy mm-hmm. for people that struggle with mental illness. And I also like how a lot of these memes are extremely relatable because they kind of zero in on a specific like mm-hmm. line of thinking for someone with anxiety or depression or some sort of mental illness. So I think that's actually really helped people feel less alone, like how prevalent these memes are becoming. But did you want to share a meme?
Sure, yeah. Let me see, am I sharing my screen? Oh, yep, here we go. Okay. This is the first one. Now, this is just, I just thought
I've seen this one.
Yeah. I just thought it was funny because I think every like clinician or professional that works with families, especially children, can relate to this. Me wanting to point out I've only seen their child for one session, and my client's parents demanding to know why there's been no noticeable changes in their child's behavior.
And yeah. For those of you just listening and not seeing the screen, so it has this woman that looks like really like concerned and worried, and that's supposed to be the therapist. And then there's this guy that's like staring her down, and that's the client's parents.
Right. Yes. Okay. I should start describing them. That's a good point. Yeah. So I know because we both worked at an agency where we worked with children the majority of the time, that we've both experienced this. So let's just talk really quickly about why this is relatable and also why parents can't expect changes in their child's behavior after one session.
Yeah. There's so much, I think, that people don't understand about therapy with kids. You know, they like my professor in grad school, Eli Karam, he called them like the, like, fix my kid parents, like mm-hmm. the parents that just like, here's my kid, like, do your thing for an hour. Okay. Bye. That's what a lot of them expect. And it's just not like that because it takes time. And especially kids that have trouble staying on task, it takes a lot of time. And also, you know, a child is a product of their environment. Mm-hmm. So if the parent is, you know, doing something at home that's exacerbating the issue, the therapist needs to work with the client, work with the parent. Mm-hmm. The parent is also, essentially, when you're working with a child, the entire family is the client.
Yeah.
And that's something that a lot of people don't understand.
Yeah, yeah. And it's easy to get into that as a therapist, to just focus on the child. And then you also wonder yourself, why is nothing changing? Why is this kid not getting better? Well, because mm-hmm. you're not addressing the family system. and it's a real issue, and like just really annoying most of the time to have to explain that to parents. They think, you know, my kid is the one having these problems. They're the one getting in trouble at school, or they're the one, you know, fighting with their siblings a lot, or they're the one, you know, doing some sort of behavior that I just really don't want them to do. And so they're the one having the obvious sort of symptoms, the obvious behaviors. They're the one that needs therapy. But most of the time, and I say this with confidence, that most of the time, that kid is just sort of like the, you know, he's just the squeaky wheel. It's the whole family that has some sort of issue, mm-hmm. and this kid's reacting to that. And so when you start working with the family, you see it's typically the parents where that issue stems from. And that's not to parent shame anyone who is struggling with a kid and feels like they're doing everything they can. Because every case is different, but typically when a child is having issues, it's because of something the adults in their life are doing or not doing. Like you said, because kids are a product of their environment. They don't just, you know, wake up one day and like, maybe they do, but they don't just wake up and be like, I'm just going to cause destruction today. You know, typically it's they're reacting to things. They're very reactive.
Yeah. And I think even when, you know, the root cause is something that was outside of the parent's control, the parents play a huge part in the healing of that child. Mm-hmm. Like when we worked at Family and Children's Place and a lot of the kids were sexually abused, you know, the root cause was the abuse itself, which the parents, I mean, sometimes it was the parents, but usually the parents, you know, did not have control over that. But then the child is, you know, having trauma responses, like, for example, difficulty regulating their emotions or throwing fits. And then the parent is punishing them for throwing a fit when what they're really experiencing is a trauma response. And so, you know, if you have the child in the session, and let's say, for example, you teach them how to take deep breaths to calm themselves down when they're angry, and then they go home and then they get angry and their parent says, stop crying, go to your room. They're not learning anything. You know, that's the time when you have to explain to the parent, this is what I taught your child today. Yeah. When they are getting worked up, having a fit, you need to talk them through this. You need to say, remember what Miss Emily taught you about taking deep breaths? Let's try that. I can only do so much an hour a week. And
right. Yeah, exactly. Because it has to be, ultimately, you know, you want to teach the kid, but you want to teach the parents too, because when the child eventually, you know, leaves therapy, and they should eventually leave therapy. I mean, that's sort of the goal, is that they get to the point where they don't need it anymore because they're maintaining or coping. You want to be able to sort of pass that on to the parent of like, this is what we did. This is what they learned. This is how you can continue to help them. If you don't, then it's just like the parent has been left out of this huge piece of their child's development and their child's experience. And that's not helpful for anyone. I think most parents really want to be a part of, you know, their children's lives and want to be the person that helps their kids and that their kid goes to for things. They just don't know how. So that's part of our job, is to teach the parent, this is how you can do it. But yeah, so, okay. We can move on to, one of your memes if you want, since I feel like we spent a lot of time on this meme,
but yeah. So I like this one.
Oh, wait, I might have to stop my screen sharing.
Wait, I just shared mine. Can you not see it?
No, hold on. No, I can't. Oh, wait, hold on. Let me stop. Do this. Okay. Now you share yours. There we go.
Okay. So this is some e-cards those that like meme series.
Mm-hmm.
It says the next time someone tells you that mental illness is all in your head, tell them, well, duh, where else is it going to be? My kidneys? So yes. This is,
good you one. Know,
is about the good old stigma of mental illness and the lack of understanding of it that floats around in our society, where people think that if you are depressed or you're anxious or you are experiencing any sort of mental illness, that it's just something that you can just like work through or make go away, or, you know, it's all in your head. I mean, it's essentially gaslighting, like telling them that, like, basically that their mental illness is their fault, making it seem not real. And it's so, I mean, it's so true. Like, yeah, it's in your head. It's a mental health issue. Like,
right.
Where else would it be?
That's my favorite thing when, like, clients say, you know, maybe this is just all in my head. And I say, well, yeah, it
right.
is. That does, just because it's all in your head doesn't mean that it's not real or that it doesn't upset you or bother you. Those two things can be true at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So like, even if you're having like what we would think of with like something being all in somebody's head, like if you're having psychosis or delusions or hallucinations or something, and you're like, oh, it's just all in my head. Well, yeah, it is. Your brain is hallucinating or making you think these things, but that doesn't mean that it's not upsetting,
mm-hmm.
and you shouldn't just ignore it.
Right.
So
like your brain is an organ, mm-hmm. just like all your other organs.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these mental health issues come from, you know, your, the way that your brain is functioning, your neurotransmitters, you know, your amygdala, like all of your parts of your brain are functioning the same way the parts of your body are functioning with any other sort of illness.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people that don't have a lot of mental health issues kind of generalize and they say like, oh, you can change anything about you. Like you, if you mm-hmm. struggle with this thing, you, if you work hard enough, if you have enough discipline, you can change it. And
yeah,
of course you can. I mean, you can, even with a mental illness, you go to therapy, you know, get medication, do all of those mental health treatments, but it's not like it's not the way that people talk about it, where they're like, oh, I just did this and this, and I was really disciplined and I changed it and I overcame this, and it was, anyone can do it. And it just doesn't work like that. All of our brains are different.
Right, right. And also, you know, some and a lot of mental illness is chronic and will never be cured.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea of selling it to people that they can cure it is just false advertising and not, it's just malpractice, because sometimes mental illness goes away. And this could be a whole nother topic in and of itself. Sometimes, mm-hmm. it's just based on circumstances, or it's, you know, a trauma response, or, you know, it's just a chemical imbalance that taking an antidepressant helps, and then you're typically fine. And that's wonderful. But then sometimes it is chronic, and it is the very unfunny, unpretty
mm-hmm.
parts of mental illness that I think we don't often talk about when we talk about mental health awareness and like bringing more mental health issues to light. We typically talk about like anxiety and depression, mm-hmm. and like those are the safe,
yeah,
sort of, you know, but there's like a whole, there's all so much other mental illness out there, substance abuse and
mm-hmm.
personality disorders and psychotic disorders and mm-hmm. bipolar disorder that are real severe and can be, of course, they can be managed, and people can, well, just like with any chronic illness, live a perfectly normal, happy, healthy life, but they can also be really, really severe,
right.
and use in and out of hospitals all the time, or long stays at hospitals, always on medication, having to have to take a lot of medication, having that medication changed a lot, like multiple suicide attempts. I mean, all of these things are parts that come with the chronic mental illness that just, it's not just going to go away. And it may not get better for some people. That's the dark side of it that we don't often talk about.
This reminds me of another meme.
Go ahead.
I'm going to go ahead and pull it up. It's like, what is it? Hold on, I'm going to stop sharing my screen for a second.
Yeah.
Oh, here it is. Sorry, one second. Okay, so it has, have you seen this before?
I don't think so, no.
So it has, I'm just like playing off what you said about how sometimes it doesn't ever go away. Mm-hmm. So it's 10 years ago and it's this girl and this like mental illness monster is like grabbing her and like, and she's like, oh my God, what's happening? And then it says now, so that was 10 years ago. And then now the mental illness monster is there and it's like, has its, I don't know what, that's not, I was going to say hand on her shoulder, but some sort of limb on her shoulder. And
tentacle, I don't know.
Tentacle, yeah, it looks like a tentacle. And she's just like eating cereal and she's like, oh, hey, buddy, what's up? Mm-hmm. Like, so the difference here is that the mental illness did not go away. It's still there. It's decreased.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not afraid of it anymore. Like, she knows how to manage it. And that's a huge thing. Especially with the more modern therapies, you know, like CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, is more about like changing your way of thinking. Whereas DBT or like dialectical behavioral therapy or acceptance and commitment therapy, mindfulness, those sorts of newer therapy models are, this is what it is. And you trying to fight it is only exacerbating the issue. So how can we help you accept that this what it is and this is what it is and manage it better.
Right. How can you live with it?
Yeah. I thought this was like a genius way of depicting that when I first saw this meme.
Yeah. That's really, we talked about like relatable memes. I feel like that's so relatable. If anyone does have chronic mental illness, even if it is just, and not to downplay it, but you know, if it is just sort of anxiety and depression, which are very, very common, lots of people have that. But you know, when you have that consistently and it's sort of always there and you're always having to sort of maintain it or be in treatment for it, then it really does sort of feel like it's just this thing that's always there. And like, sometimes it lets you know it's there and sometimes it's a lot more quiet and you just kind of live your life with it. And anyone, physical or mental health, you know, people with chronic illness experience that.
Yeah. And I think that is another one of those things that's a misconception that people will, like, so often my clients will, you know, we'll have some sort of revelation where they'll gain a really insignificant piece of self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll be like, okay, but what now? Like, how do I fix it? How do I make it go away? And it's like the awareness of it is like 80% of the work. You know, once you're aware, you can like separate it. Like you can say, okay, this is my mental illness. This is like my self minus mental illness, and this is the mental illness, and I can learn to like label it as mental illness. And kind of like let it be, like let it pass by, like witness it rather than get like sucked into it.
Yes, yes. That, okay. That made me think of two things that are both related to this. So like working with clients that have, this is a little more clinical and, you know, but working with clients that do have like a chronic mental illness. Like I have a client that has a schizophrenia diagnosis. And a lot of what we've had to do, it's pretty manageable at this point for them, but a lot of what we've had to do is help this person differentiate who they are and what are the symptoms of the mental illness. Mm-hmm. Especially when you have like a lot of like intrusive thoughts or like hallucinations or delusions, and they're really disturbing. And maybe they're not congruent with who you are as a person, with how you would actually, what you actually think and feel. That becomes really upsetting. And a lot of people can think, oh, wow, what's wrong with me? I'm a horrible person. Why would I think these things? Mm-hmm. But, you know, the difference is those are the symptoms. Those aren't you. And so part of living with mental illness is being able to tell the difference between what are the symptoms and what is you. And it's not always easy, because sometimes those symptoms, like with depression, like low motivation, fatigue, isolation, like not being able to concentrate or remember things, that sort of like brain fog that can happen, mm-hmm. The cognitive stuff that can happen. A lot of times people really personalize that, like, oh, well, I'm just like not smart, or I'm mm-hmm. lazy, or, you know, well, no, like that's part of your illness. You're right. Not lazy. You're just having the symptom of no motivation. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to distinguish. People find that hard to distinguish, and other people find that hard to distinguish. So a lot of times people get labeled mm-hmm. these characteristics that are just symptoms of their mental illness. But then we can move on. Uh-huh. But have you ever had to like break it to a client that there is no cure for what is happening to them?
That's a good question.
Because I had that happen not too mm-hmm. long ago. Different client. This client has PTSD, and mm-hmm. it's pretty severe. It's not like there was one traumatic event and we're working through that. It's like this repeated. They got it from the career that they were in mostly. So there was years and years of this, and I had to like break it to them, and I didn't realize that they didn't know this already. So that was it was kind of an awkward conversation. Uh-huh. But I was like, they said something like, when will all this go away? When will this stop? And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, never. And, ooh, you know, yeah. Not that harsh. I mean, yeah, I was a lot nicer and professional, but I was pretty much like, never. And they were like, what?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, shit, I didn't tell you. this is like a thing now. And they were like, what do you mean? And I had to explain that like, it can get better. It can totally get better. It can get to the point where it barely bothers you, sort of like a cold sore.
But it's
like,
still
it
there.
Just pops up. Yeah. But that virus is still in you. That uh-huh. trauma is still there. And you're still going to have moments where you react and respond in that way, and you're still gonna have mm-hmm. symptoms. And they were like, it was sad, they were heartbroken, but then like we kind of processed that, and then the next time they came back and they were like, okay, I thought about what you said and I was really mad, but now I feel like I'm accepting it. And I was like, yes.
And it does help. Like, so I can't think of a specific, I think as a therapist I haven't had a significant moment like that, mm-hmm. but I've generally explained, like,
yeah,
like learning to accept it, that it's, you know, that it might not go away. But I think that I kind of had that happen to me as the client with mm-hmm. my own therapist, where, you know, I have really, really poor executive functioning skills. Like I have poor time management. I'm always late. I'm always like really disorganized. I'm really forgetful. And I used to get so down on myself about it. And she said to me one day, because I was late to like every single session, and she's like, you will never be on time. She said that. And I was like,
I remember.
No, like I need to figure this out. Like I can't keep going on like this, being late all the time. She's like, that's just you. You're never gonna be someone that's prompt. That's just not mm-hmm. who you are. And once I once I accepted that, I thought, you know, it's the people that are bothered by it, like, mm-hmm. as the therapist, the people that are bothered by it are not going to be my client, and mm-hmm. they'll find someone that better. And the people that aren't bothered by it are going to, you know what I mean? Like, some people are going to be bothered by it. Some people aren't. Some people find it relatable.
I was going to say, you told me that some of your clients
like
it because it gives them permission to not have to always be punctual.
Like, if you have this like super professional punctual, like everything's mm-hmm. like so on time, it can be kind of intimidating. And I've had mm-hmm. people tell me that it helps them feel a little, it helps them feel like I'm more human and more relatable. So, and I, like, a lot of these qualities of a disorder are just so like shamed by society. Like, we see people being late or people being disorganized as like lazy, and it's not always out of laziness. It's, you know, the ADHD, like, those are classic symptoms of ADHD, but those mm-hmm. are also symptoms of many mental health disorders. And we are just so quick to judge and to label people. And I think with the being on time thing specifically, so many people are like, being on time is not hard. If you're 10 minutes late, then you know you just leave 10 minutes earlier next time. And like, it sounds so simple, but it's just.
Yeah. That's not all it takes. Like, that's not all that's involved. And I have a problem with that too. And I wish it was that simple. Because that's one of those things, like, if it was that simple, don't you think everybody would do it? Like, do you just think that there are people that are just better than others? I mean, that's kind of what it sounds like when people say that stuff. Like, well, it is that easy, and because you can't do it, you're just not as good.
Right.
Like, but no. Mm-hmm. That's not how it works, because that's, like, probably 50% or more of the population struggles with that.
Right.
So they can't all just be bad. What? Like, maybe our standards should change a little bit.
Yeah. And it's just not a reflection on like how good of a therapist I am isn't a reflection on, like, I can be late and not be a good therapist, or you can be late and be a great therapist with people. And that's just an example. Like, that goes for any profession.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And you're right. It's one of those, like, you've got to just decide, like, what works for you. If that really bothers you for some reason, and it may have your own thing going on, or like, being on time is really important to you, that's fine. But like, yes, find a therapist, find a medical professional or anyone mm-hmm. who is always on time, because at least then those parts of your personality are going to line up. Right. And that's important with finding a therapist too. But that's good to know. There's a lot of variety out there.
Yeah.
Lots of different therapists. We're people too. We have our own shit. A lot of us have our own trauma and mental health diagnoses ourselves mm-hmm. and are in therapy ourselves. That's really, really common.
That blows people's minds. That blows people's minds.
Yeah.
When their therapist has a therapist.
Yes. Yeah. Oh man. I wish I could find that meme. I couldn't find it. I could probably Google it. But it's like, it was like, your therapist is your grand therapist. Or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I see that.
And then there was another one that was like, I want to find my therapist, you know, and get to like the boss therapist or whatever, like the last level. Like, it has to end somewhere.
But maybe not.
Maybe not. Yeah. Maybe it goes in a circle. Like, you know, dentists have to go to other dentists, like, they work on their own teeth.
And that's the thing. Like, why do like people, I guess that is actually kind of weird to think about too. A dentist going, you're to a dentist, but yeah.
It's like dentist.
Dentists have teeth. Like, they have to go to a dentist too.
I would hope.
I wanted to, real quick, just circle back on what you were saying earlier about how it becomes, I thought of another meme that was relating. Mm-hmm. Here, I'm going to share my screen again.
Okay.
Have you seen this one?
Yes, I saw that when I was searching for memes today.
Yeah. What is her name?
Dolly Parton.
Dolly Parton, yeah. Oh, so it says, hey, I like your personality. And she's just doing this like this like finger snap thing, like, thanks, it's a disorder. And I think that it's real, like, sometimes a person's mental health disorder becomes so much of their identity mm-hmm. that they like you were saying earlier, like separating this is your mental health, this is your mental illness, and this is you.
Yeah.
And they just lose it to the point where it's like they don't know who they are
right.
without their disorder. Like it becomes a piece of their identity, and yep. getting help is scary, because if they're like, if I have this disorder and then I get help and the help actually is effective, then who am I? Mm-hmm. And that is scarier to them mm-hmm. than continuing to live with their disorder. I feel like I've come across that a lot with like resistant clients.
And oh yeah.
Kind of talk to them about their resistance, and that ends up, you know, once we do some exploring, that ends up being where they land, is that if I get better, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, definitely.
Interesting point.
All right, I've got some that I'll show now. Wait, okay. This sharing screen thing is going to be the death of me, because I'm not that quick. Okay, I got it. I love this one. This is probably one of my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Because it explains the therapy so well. And so anyone who is a therapist or knows about this stuff is going to get it right away. But if you're mm-hmm. not, it actually probably could be kind
this
of a good,
so funny. I love
yeah, this. Cheat yeah. sheet. So you understand yeah. the different theories. But of course we've got Freudian, which is classic. Your mother makes shit happen. Behaviorism, shit happens after the bell sounds based on like Pavlov and classical conditioning mm-hmm. And then rational emotive therapy, own your shit, cognitive therapy, think about your shit rationally, humanistic therapy, your shit is good, gestalt therapy, where is your shit in this moment, which is just kind of funny, play therapy, play with your shit, solution focused therapy, how do you want your shit to be different? Narrative therapy, shit happens in your own story.
This one's it.
Couples therapy, your shit. And I'm sure lots of people that go to couples therapy feel, the thing I hear the most is like, well, I didn't like going to couples therapy because they made it seem like it was all my fault.
Yeah.
Everyone says that. And I'm like, I'm sure sometimes that's true, but the majority of these therapists that you're seeing are not just ganging up on you. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just calling out your bullshit and you don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Family therapy. Someone has to be responsible for this shit. Group therapy. Share your shit. Which is really what group therapy becomes. It's a bunch of people bitching sometimes. Mm-hmm. But if you don't know how to, like, control a group. Harm right. reduction therapy. How can you make shit less important in your life? The 12-step therapy, admit you are powerless over shit. And then brief therapy, this shit better be over soon.
I love this. It's it's funny, but it's just really bring, like, you know, like a big theme in school that they teach us is that no model or approach is necessarily better than mm-hmm. another. It's just a different approach. Mm-hmm. And it's so true, like this meme so concisely shows all the different approaches.
Mm-hmm. And this is just like, this is not even all of, this is like a small amount.
Oh yeah. Not yeah. all.
These sure, are like yeah. probably the most commonly known.
There are so many.
But I would love to see this done with some of the other ones, mm-hmm. the little less known ones. But yeah, I thought this was really funny for that reason. It is a good sort of reference. When you're like, wait, what is gestalt therapy again? Which, like, I don't know anyone who uses that.
I think it's the, some of these are like concepts, you know, like.
Right, like Freudian behaviorism.
Yeah, like I would say I use gestalt like
every day, you know, but I'm not like intentionally using it. I'll just,
you're not
like,
a gestalt therapist.
Yeah. Like
you're just using some of the stuff from, yeah. Cause right, there's some like, really good exercises that they have.
Yeah. Like where is your shit in this moment is gestalt. So like just mm-hmm. for people listening, like looking at what's happening in the room right now and
right.
how what is happening in the room is, you know, indicative of what happens to you outside of the room. So like,
mm-hmm. if right.
getting mad at me, like I feel like they're getting annoyed with me. I'll be like, I feel like something that I'm saying is like having some sort of impact on you right now. Let's talk about that, you know, but
right.
Right.
Or like the empty chair, you know, okay. Yeah. Like, so talk to your shit. It's in this chair
mm-hmm.
and, you know, just like, just ignore me. Like I'm not here. Just talk to this thing. I know that is fun to do though. Just as a therapist, if you get someone who's on board, who's willing to do that, that's so much fun to do.
To do empty chair.
Yes.
Wait, let's explain. So empty chair, like when you have an empty chair in the room and you say like, pretend that whatever person, pretend your father, your mother, mm-hmm. your
whoever ex, hurt you or
whoever hurt you, yeah,
it's holding something chair. Against, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What would you say to them right now?
It's so cathartic. If mm-hmm. you've ever done it, it's super cathartic. And then watching someone else do it, it's amazing. And it's because, you know, like at first they're like, oh, wow, this is stupid. Like, I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. This is dumb. But then they like get into it and the emotion just pours out and you're just like watching it. You're like, wow, that all of that was in there. And I, you know, like, how did that feel to just like dump that, to just let, it doesn't change anything, uh-huh. you know, but you can come to a lot of realizations from that too.
Yeah.
And they can be like, wow, I didn't realize I felt that way. Or I didn't mm-hmm. realize I had all that built up. Yeah. But,
and I think that brings to another point, like, it's basically just processing, you know, like, mm-hmm. Like the, it's similar to writing a letter to the person and
yes,
burning
yes.
it, you know, not actually sending it.
And kind of like a free form, like, you know, like I can't even think of what it's called, but just like, as things come up, you just say it, like you're not editing.
Like a stream of consciousness.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Stream of consciousness. I could not think of that.
Yeah.
You're just letting it come out and you're not filtering it. And so it, eventually it gets to like some of the more core things that you uh-huh. are constantly trying to like make nice or filter through and not actually say, because you don't really want to say it because you're going to judge yourself or you're afraid someone else is going to judge you or whatever. And like, then just saying it, it's like, well, now it's out there. Now we can talk about that. And nothing bad happened.
Which is right.
A lot of people feel is like, I said all this stuff, I got it out and the world didn't crumble around me.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be okay, you know, in the long run.
Right. And I think that, people who process things externally, like, you know, that process mm-hmm. through talking or writing or, like they, that's really helpful for them because you can talk to the therapist about mm-hmm. this person.
Right.
And that's helpful. You know, you're still externally processing it, but saying it to them, to their imaginary self out loud. Like they're processing it. Like some may see that technique is like, okay, you need to just get this out. But it's a technique of processing. Like you're actually, sometimes you don't even know what you need to say to them until you start saying it. And then it right. just kind of comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can be really powerful, but it is, you have to make sure that you feel comfortable with and that the some clients are not going to be yes. on board with it. Yeah. And like, it's important that the therapist is comfortable with, like my own therapist said that she never uses it because she feels stupid using it. And so mm-hmm. it's not going to be effective if she feels stupid.
Mm-hmm. Right. And yes. And you got to be comfortable with whatever may come out.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like some real raw emotion could come out. And if you're not expecting it, you know, you got to be mindful of your own, the way you're going to handle it and the way you're going to react. Cause you don't want them to do all of that
and be vulnerable like that and then feel judged or shamed, that's just right. going to shut everything down. So, but it is cool when you can get it to work. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me go back and find another one. So this one is just like 2020. Every time a client comes in and they're like, oh, I had a really bad week, or, you know, today was not a good day. And I always ask the question, because it's just habit, like, so what's bothering you? What's been going on? What's got you feeling upset? And they're just like, look at me like, why are you asking me this question?
Yeah. Well, do you want to read the meme first before we explain?
Oh, yeah. I forget that some people are just going to be listening. Sorry. So it says, therapist, so what's stressing you out lately?
Me. The therapist is saying that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then me, and then it's a picture of this boy, like, I guess he's fishing, and he's like looking at the camera, and right above him are the words like, bitch, everything. So like, just, yes. Like, I went to the doctor last week and they took my blood pressure, and she was like, oh wow, your blood pressure is really high. And I was like, yeah. And she's like, is that normal? And I'm like, well, it is now. Because I'm like, isn't everyone's blood pressure high? Mm-hmm. Isn't everyone living with some level of just constant fear right now? Mm-hmm. And if you're not, why not? That's a little weird.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really, I feel like this year too, this meme is particularly relatable. Because everything just feels like across the board, it's like notches high, like 10 notches higher in stress. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm asking, like, sometimes clients will just like they'll just want to update me, and they'll be like, okay, this happened. And then we want to know, like, I want to know which direction they want to go and like what they won't feel like would be most helpful to go deeper. And I'll be like, which is weighing on you the most? And that question always like gets them, because it all kind of jumbles together. Mm-hmm. And they just have trouble. Like, I think that's like, this is another really good meme. I'll pull it up. Well, I'll just explain it. So it's like a jumbled ball of yarn.
Yes.
Like above the clients, like in like a little thought bubble. Mm-hmm. It's a jumbled ball of yarn, and the therapist is sitting there knitting the yarn.
Yeah.
Because that's essentially so what therapy is. Like, it mm-hmm. doesn't, the therapist isn't like taking the yarn and like changing it, like magically changing it.
It's or telling you what to do with the yarn, which yeah. is a misconception.
Uh huh.
They're just making it make sense. It yeah. Make,
right. And I think that asking them what's weighing on you the most, it helps them like stop and be like, okay, what is it really that's bothering me? Because sometimes it's like something big will be bothering you. And then every little thing, you know, it's mm-hmm. like when you like have, you know, start crying because you like, I don't know, I can't think of any good, something small, like you dropped your pen on the floor. I don't know.
Right.
And you like all of a sudden are like freaking out, but it's not because you dropped your pen on the
yes road, like that's the straw that broke the camel's back,
right? Yes. Thank yeah. you. Yeah. And so I think that sometimes people have trouble differentiating between the straws
mm-hmm.
and like the last straw and like the bulk of the straws
right?
Because it seems in that moment like it is, like the pen dropping on the floor is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But so
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. So it's just everything. And sometimes that is the client's answer. And you're like, same. Uh-huh. I relate. So, okay, wait, one more. So this
what?
One.
Okay. This is the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
This meme is.
What the fuck? Sorry.
It says, you know, psychologist, this is what the psychologist is saying, all dreams have meaning. And then my dream, and then it shows a picture
of a uncooked, full skinned, plucked chicken with a Barbie inside of it, and just her head is sticking out, holding a toy gun.
The chicken, not the Barbie.
Yeah, the chicken is holding.
The chicken.
The Barbie's inside the dead chicken, and they're both holding, someone's holding this gun up like it's like a hold up, you know.
Oh, yeah,
like
it's probably her arm through the chicken.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And it's just weird. And they're just like on a tile floor. So, like, I don't know who took this picture, but it's, yeah. I just think it's funny because I love when people like are like, oh, I had a dream. Can I tell you about it? And you tell me what it means. And I'm like, that's not how it works. And also that is totally outdated and like nobody really does that anymore or should do that anymore. But some dreams are just weird shit that's going on in your head. And we don't even know why we dream fully, what the purpose of it is. Mm-hmm. We haven't even figured that out yet. So how can we interpret? We don't even know why we're doing it. Sometimes dreams are pretty literal and, or, you know, sometimes you can see the connection between stuff and you're like, oh yeah, it's because you felt, you know, abandoned by your father at this age or whatever. Mm-hmm. But this, the like ascribing meaning to a dream or to particular symbols within a dream doesn't make sense on a universal standpoint, because, you know, if the chair is supposed to represent stability, and I'm totally making it up, I don't know what the chair represents. But if, like, say it's like Jungian, like Carl Jung, you know, came up with like a lot of this dream theory stuff, and he would have said like, okay, the chair represents stability. Well, but like, what if it's a society where they don't have chairs, they don't sit in chairs? If they dream of a chair, does it mean the same thing? What if they never have a dream about a chair? Or like, you know, like running water can mean like so many different things to different people. And it depends on the culture and the environment and where you are, you know, geologically. What if you live in the desert? Like, so what does running water mean the same thing as someone who lives by a stream or a waterfall or has one running water coming out of their faucets? Like, it just has to be different. It can't all mean the same thing. So
I think this is an example of what you were saying at the beginning, like that these memes are not always like good and necessary. I mean, it's not like this one isn't accurate. Like,
yeah, this is obviously like just to be funny.
Right. But like people might see this and think that a psychologist would actually say it. Like,
yeah,
most psychologists are not actually going to like encourage you. The only time I've ever talked about dreams with clients is when they bring it up.
Yes.
And I'm like, I mean, we can Google it if you want, but like, I don't know if this is going to be helpful. I think I remember reading about, it was when I was doing one of my PTSD videos. I was doing this like PTSD video series, and it was saying that disturbing dreams is a symptom, and I think it was in adults it's more clear, and in kids it's more symbolic.
That's interesting.
Or it might be the other way around. I don't remember, but I just thought that was interesting.
They are typically, I mean, I just from working with clients with trauma, my clients with trauma tend to have nightmares as adults, whereas my clients without trauma don't have nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
They may have weird dreams. They may even have dreams that are pretty, you'd think are pretty typical, like, oh, my spouse was cheating on me in my dream, or I, you know, was in front of my eighth grade class and I was naked, or, you know, like those kind of common ones. And you're like, okay, yeah, those, I mean, we all kind of have that. But like the nightmares, they're definitely more common in kids. And the idea is that you like eventually grow out of them. But I see nightmares a lot more in clients with trauma. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that that's more related. And those nightmares may have a little bit more meaning, especially if they have themes about the trauma. But a lot of that's just contextual, you know? And like, if a client wants to talk about what their dreams mean, you know, my go-to is, well, first I tell them, like, I don't do that. I can't tell you what your dream means. Like, I'm not, that's mm-hmm. not my thing. But we can talk about how you felt in the dream and how you felt when you woke up from the dream. Mm-hmm. And if there was anything in the dream that made you think about something else in your life, because if it means something to them, then it's important. Mm-hmm. But it's probably not anything too important in the long run.
And I think it's sort of like, I don't like, I think that a lot of people, you know, like, uncertainty is really uncomfortable for people. And mm-hmm. dreams are so, they're like kind of invasive. Like, they're just like in your head and you don't get to choose them. And they're just like there. And if they're unpleasant, you just like have to suffer through them. Mm. And so I think it's like, it can be really disturbing to people to have these disturbing dreams and not know what they mean. So yeah. It's really understandable to want to find what they mean and gain some clarity about this thing that's just mm-hmm. like in your brain that you know, unless like you have, like, I think probably, I think some people like know they're dreaming and they like can wake themselves up.
Yeah.
Or they know they're dreaming and they can't wake themselves up, like, you know, lucid dream. Mm-hmm. But they're so scary if you don't know you're dreaming while you're dreaming and you're like trapped in this dream. Mm-hmm. It's very distressing. And it's completely understandable why people want to find meaning, you know, like, tell me what this means so that we can get to the bottom of this and make this right. stop.
Yeah, right. That's probably
isn't that straightforward.
Yeah, yeah. That's probably one of the most, like, from self-report, the most disturbing, like, symptoms mm-hmm. from people with trauma or PTSD is the stuff that happens when they sleep. So, like, the night terrors, the nightmares, mm-hmm. the not being able to, everything sort of revolving around sleep is, at least for me, what I hear a lot is people complaining about that and saying, like, this is the worst part of it. Can you help me sleep? Like, can we do something so that I can go to sleep? And that is like one of the most crucial parts. You need to eat, you need to drink, you need to shit, and you need to sleep. Like, those are all things that you have to do to survive.
Drink water. Yeah.
Yes. Obviously. Yeah. I'm not encouraging just drinking anything. But no, yeah, you have to, those are just basic things that you have to do just to wake up the next day and live.
Yeah.
And if you don't, there will be serious consequences. So when these things are affecting people's sleep, then you get a lot of other unwanted symptoms from mm-hmm. that lack of sleep. That
right.
is just a horrible cycle. And I love sleep so much. So, like, I really, really feel for people with sleep disorders or any sort of thing, that nightmares, whatever it is, like, I feel for you.
And it's something you cannot avoid. Like, mm-hmm. if you have anxiety about, like, driving in a car, you can, you know, maybe live in a city where you can take the subway right. or you can walk or ride a bike or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, avoidance is
not good, but
yeah, but, like, it's still, like, there no. and you have, and you can face it whenever you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you, like, it's like people it creates anxiety about going to sleep.
Yes.
They know they're going to have these dreams, but they can't not sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, they're just like forced to face these, like, really distressing, yes. like hours of their day. And it's, yeah, it's, I mean, it really is like, it's really important. So
yeah, it's gotta be one of the worst, I think.
Yeah.
Just that people tend, out of everything, that's what they tend to say is the worst, anything mm-hmm. that affects their sleep. And I feel that. And I wish it was easier to treat. Sleep disorders are pretty difficult for a lot of reasons, but yeah, so sometimes a dream's just a dream. Sometimes a Barbie in an uncooked chicken holding a gun at you is just a Barbie in an uncooked chicken holding a gun at you. And there's no deeper meaning to that.
Yeah.
Do you want to share like one or two more before we like wrap up?
I don't have any particular ones in mind.
Okay. I have, I think I have like some more that we can do.
Okay.
Oh, this is a good one. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is like the meme of, from The Simpsons. I've never watched it. Don't come at me for that. What's
yeah, Lisa? Haven't either.
Lisa Simpson, I guess. And she's like giving a presentation and it got writing on it. And it says, people who want to refuse care to patients due to personal or religious beliefs don't belong in the medical field or in mental health services.
Yep.
Mic drop. Because I am so tired of hearing medical, mental health professionals, healthcare professionals, all of it is under the same thing. Hearing healthcare professionals talk about like, well, I don't believe in this because of my religion. Well, too bad, because
yeah, exactly, yeah.
Your religion is not the deciding point, should not be the deciding point for any particular person's medical care except your own.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want a blood transfusion because it goes against your religion, that's fine. But are you going to refuse everyone else blood transfusions? Mm-hmm. No. If you don't think that, you know, psychotropic medication should be used to treat mental illness because you're against taking any form of drug or substance, whatever, that's fine. But you can't tell other people not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it might help them. And this just extends to so many different things.
Yeah. There was, yeah.
No, you go ahead. Sorry.
Well, there was, I don't know if you saw this in Texas. They like made it so that social workers could refuse to work with people based on sexual orientation.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I was so like,
that angers me.
Right. Yeah, that goes against the values of social work.
Yeah, that's the whole freaking point of social work.
That's the whole point, right. Like,
is to work with everyone.
Uh-huh.
Even
marginalized populations.
Yes.
Like, that's literally the definition of a social worker. Oh. Like, it's so broad. There's all different types of social work, but the common mm-hmm. thread is that you help vulnerable populations.
Mm-hmm.
And to refuse to work with someone based on sexual orientation, it's just, and then people want to say, oh, well, it's my religious right. Like, it's my religious right. It goes against my beliefs. Mm-hmm. Okay. I am not Christian, and I'm not going to speak on this, but I have heard that that is controversial, that the Bible even says that in the first place. And that's, like, I just get so tired of us using religion to, like, excuse certain things. Like, excuse mm-hmm. discrimination. Like,
excuse just, like, being a dick.
Yeah, yes, yeah, like, you don't get to be a dick just because your religion says so. Like
that's if you don't, you know, like gay marriage, don't have a gay marriage.
There like, was, oh, I, there was a meme, I'll just explain this one, too. It was, like, I don't remember how it was worded. I'll look it up. Go ahead, were you going
to
say something?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, like, it just extends to all of that. Like, you may think that someone's sexual orientation or gender identity or whatever is a sin. Okay, I will disagree with you on that, but mm-hmm. that's your right. But are you going to refuse treatment to someone who needs treatment because of that? First of all, that's horrible. That's just an awful thing. Mm-hmm. And if your religion teaches that, then it's an awful religion. And I say that as someone who grew up Christian and was raised in a Christian home and went to church and studied mm-hmm. the Bible until I was 18 years old and all this stuff. Like, I don't believe anymore, but I was raised like that. We weren't taught that. We weren't taught to refuse care or help to anyone based on whether we agreed with their quote unquote lifestyle choices, you know. Mm-hmm. It didn't change how you treated people. So I feel like that's not even an excuse, because like the Bible doesn't teach that. Yeah. And I would hope no religion teaches that, but you know, if it bothers you that much, then you really need to get out of that profession and do something else.
Right. I saw, so the meme that I was talking about, it said, if you're against gay marriage, please remember that you can always just say no when a gay person proposes to you. And it's so true. Like, and I know we're talking about this in a professional setting. Like, you can work with someone that mm-hmm. does something you're against, and like I do that all the time. Like,
yeah, that's like all the time,
like, right? Like, not with any of these like social issues, because yeah. you know, I don't have any of those opinions, but like some, like, I have a client that does something that I like just don't relate to, or I would disagree myself, or I disagree with. Yeah, yeah, and I still work with them, because that's the job, that's what you have to do. And you're like, your religious and personal beliefs are yours mm-hmm. for you. They're not anyone else's. Everyone's entitled to their own beliefs.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, I don't personally use, you know, any hard drugs, and I don't, you know, I don't use those, and I don't want to, but do I just refuse clients with substance use issues because, oh, you use this drug and I don't think that's okay? No, that's the whole point, is that you're here for help because you don't want to be doing this anymore, or mm-hmm. whatever. And we'll work on it together. Your lifestyle is different than mine, and that's okay. Or like people that live, or people that work with, populations that, you know, the majority of society would not be okay with, like child sex offenders, or sex mm-hmm. offenders in general, or, you know, people that batter their spouses or their partners, or, you know, that population, like, I would hope like you don't agree with that, and you don't mm-hmm. think that stuff's okay, but you're still working with them because that's the job, and your goal is to try to help them in some way.
Yeah. And I think that example is a little bit different, because a piece of what you're trying to help them with is not repeating that behavior.
That's true. Yeah.
Whereas something like sexual orientation, you're not trying to,
yeah, that's a whole nother thing.
You know,
thing.
That those types of, you know, conversion therapy and that kind of stuff exists, but like the hope is that you're not actually, you know, trying to change that.
Right. Trying to make them not gay suddenly.
Or, right. You know,
yeah.
But I see your point. It's definitely true. Like it's just how the professional world works. Like you might have to work with someone who is doing something that you don't like, and that's just how it goes. Mm-hmm. And it goes against the values of the field. And if you can't, I don't know. I mean, I think like having certain beliefs for just yourself, like if you believe that gay people are sinning or whatever, that's even problematic. Like, even if you're able to like manage that and work with gay people, and I know this meme is like, we're just using sexual orientation as mm-hmm. as an example, but like that's good. But like the fact that you even have that opinion,
yeah,
is also problematic in itself.
Right.
Because right. that is gonna fog your ability to work with them, I think. I mean, I don't know, maybe not, like maybe
that would be a bias for sure that
yeah. you but would I think people yeah. can work through it enough to work with people, but like It's just not conducive to the mental health field to have some of these beliefs. It's not what the mental health field stands for.
It shouldn't be. Yeah. I mean, it definitely, there's a lot, unfortunately, of people in this field and even in social work that do sort of hold those beliefs. Like, especially when it comes to like abortion, I've met a lot of them, but that I think that's in everything. There's always going to be people like that. And I just, you know, I wish you would have chose a different field to be in, mm-hmm. if you hold those beliefs, but
then again, you have people that don't want to make a cake for a gay couple. You know, it's like,
yeah.
a different field. Well,
right.
Apparently this is an issue even if you own a bakery, like, you know, like.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. And that's just weird to me.
Yeah.
For lots of reasons, but also like, it's just a customer. Like, come on. You know?
Right.
I don't know. But that's something I'm sure people will disagree with, and I don't care. Anyways, this last one we can do. I just thought this one was kind of cute. So it's that meme of like the woman like shouting and pointing, and then on the other side it's that white cat sitting at the table with some salad in front of it, just, like, kind of blankly looking at her. Very popular meme last year, I think, and early this year it was like really trending. But on the side of the woman yelling and pointing, it says "me venting to my therapist," and then on the side with the cat, it says "her therapy dog sleeping through the whole session and not providing emotional support." And that's just cute.
That's it. Just interesting. Like, I wonder what the client would, you know, because it's a dog, so mm-hmm. you want to not take offense to that. But like, I also feel like a part of me would be like, wow, like my problems are like, so
the dog doesn't even care.
Right. Like, it would give you that sense of this dog that's trained to be providing me support is just sitting there
like, come on,
go bored right now while I'm here like in tears over all the problems in my life, you know. Like,
it would be kind of cool. I would take it personally.
Yeah,
but I take that stuff personally from animals. Like, mm-hmm. my cat shuns me for whatever reason and I'm like, they hate me. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, logically that's not true, but it hurts my feelings. So I would be very offended if the therapy dog, and I would probably find a different therapist. No, I'm just kidding. But I don't have a therapy dog, so I don't know. I've never worked with one in session, unless it was the client's like service animal, which is different because mm-hmm. they're definitely going to respond to the client because they're their service animal. But
I think the idea of therapy support animals is really good, you mm-hmm. know, like at Family and Children's Place. For those of you listening, Stephanie and I used to work together at an agency called Family and Children's Place. So if I say that, that's what I'm talking about. There was the therapy dog Emmy, and then Jennifer, our my former supervisor, and Stephanie Solcesar has mm-hmm. the therapy dog. And it was interesting, like, to hear Jennifer's, like, because she was getting him trained.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to do a certain number of hours. You know, like, we had to get our hours to get our license.
Yeah.
And he had to get his hours cute. to be licensed as a therapy animal. Oh,
to get his, like, internship in.
Yeah. But I think it probably, especially for the kids, I think it is probably,
oh my gosh, I could imagine. Helpful. Yeah.
Yeah.
How comfort, especially if it's like you're going to be working on trauma. I'm sure that having compassionate animal there that's trained makes it so much easier. And even for clients like that might be nonverbal or might be like have, you know, some sort of developmental or, you know, neurodiverse thing going on, and just like sitting and staring at you and talking may just not be effective for them or something that they can do. And having that animal there to feel, and it, you know, it activates all the senses. You can get a lot of pressure, you know, from an animal sitting on you or laying its head on you, and their smells, and they interact with you, and they're just, that's the unconditional positive regard that we try to give our clients. But no, you can't give it better than an animal can. Like a dog just gives unconditional positive regard perfectly when they do it, I think. So, you know, it's like, it doesn't matter what you say, just keep petting me and I will listen.
Yeah.
That's so comforting. So.
Right.
I think they're great tools too.
Yeah.
I love when my clients bring in their service animals though, even though I can't like pet them and play with them because they're working, of course. Don't ever touch a service animal without asking their person first, okay?
Isn't that like a general rule about animals in general?
It really should be. You shouldn't touch animals without asking first, because you don't know like what's going on with that animal, or like what if they bite and then you're gonna like sue the person. But I don't know. But especially if they're working, if they're service animals, if they're doing a job, and you do not need to be distracting them. And it irks me so much when people do that. I know that's like a normal reaction, because you're like, oh my God, that dog is so cute, and you want to touch it. Don't touch it.
Like,
I have to tell, I have to tell myself that all the time. When they're in session with me, I'm like, I just want to like snuggle up with that dog, but I can't because they're working.
Do you have that a lot of clients that bring
I do. I'm lucky that we have service animals that come in. I have one client, they are a veteran with PTSD, and they have a service dog that they bring with them everywhere. And this dog is so cute. Oh my gosh. And he's still little. He's not little. He's a German Shepherd. So he's going to be really big, but he's still kind of like in puppy stage, because he's going through training right now as well. So I can't interact with the dog at all, because he's not even fully trained yet. He's learning. But that doesn't stop the dog from saying goodbye to me when he leaves. He comes up and gives me a little sniff and nudge with the nose like he's saying goodbye. And I swear that makes my day. Aww. Yeah.
That's interesting. I don't think I've ever had a client.
It's cool. Yeah. It's really cool when they come in, just because you're like, this is a change, you know?
Yeah.
And it's cool because sometimes you get to see them work. So like I can tell when my client's getting upset, but it's even more, it's like a confirmation, because the dog will like put his paw on him, or you know, lay on him or whatever, or bark or whatever they're trained to do. And and so it's like the dog's helping me, you know, help this client self-regulate and calm down and stay grounded. So
yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. No animals can be. I mean, you know that I've never been a big pet person, but I know that for a lot of people, they can be really helpful, especially one that's trained.
Yeah, exactly. It's awesome. I always think that I would like train an animal to be my emotional support therapy animal for work, but it really is so much work, and I'm just kind of lazy right now, so maybe one day.
But did you have any more?
Last one, I think, unless you have something.
It sounds like you have good ones picked out.
So. Okay, this is the last one, just because this is topical. For 2020. So the meme is, the Therapist in 2020 Starter Pack. And it's got a bunch of different kinds of masks. It's got the Zoom logo. It's got COVID-19. It's got Netflix, Purell hand sanitizer, a fun little cartoon graphic about burnout, anxiety, depression, Lysol wipes, and then the vote sticker.
Yep.
Yeah.
all of those.
That is exactly, yes, everything.
I mean, I think that's like universal. I don't know if this is just for therapists.
No, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it is pretty universal.
I think the burnout, like, I think a therapist burnout is different than other professions because we do have the emotional, mm-hmm. it can be emotionally draining.
This could easily be for teachers too in 2020, mm-hmm. though. Gosh, teachers are unsung heroes that do not get anywhere near the recognition they deserve even before all of this crap. And now I don't even know how they're doing it. I mean, it was hard for me to adjust to telehealth. And that was just with like one person at a time. Mm-hmm. That wasn't an entire class of children and trying to teach them things that they will retain later and do a lesson plan and all that crap. So,
Yeah, didn't you say that? Cause I don't work with kids right now, but you said that like your kids would like turn off their video.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
And you can't do anything about it.
Like imagine. Jerks.
Yeah. Like if you had a classroom full of mm-hmm. kids, but a virtual classroom full of kids who are just like, have right in front of them the ability to just like push buttons that's going to make them not, you know, have to participate like that, which would just be so frustrating. And they can mute, like, they can mute themselves and turn off their video. Like,
yes.
Frustrating.
And they would, yeah, like my kids would do that. Or they would like point the camera up to the ceiling so I couldn't see them. Or they would like mute me, or they'd mute themselves, or they would turn off the video, or they'd just hang up. Which was like really rude. and yeah, there's literally nothing I can do about it at that point except try to call them back. But, you know.
Yeah.
It's just kind of funny. I think it's interesting because it like the power shifted in that relationship in mm-hmm. office. They can't, what can they do? Just they could get up and leave. But I've had kids do that before and their parents make them come right back in.
Uh-huh.
Their parents are like, get back in there. Don't embarrass me, you know. But with telehealth, like, they're just done with me. They're just done with me. And, like, I kind of, there's not much I can do about it. So
right.
It's kind of funny because I think it gives kids a little bit more power. But it's also... I'm sure that would be so annoying to have like 30 kids that you're trying to teach all having technical issues.
Right.
I don't know how they do it. I feel for teachers. I feel for parents right now. I feel for kids.
Yeah. I have one of my friends is a teacher. She teaches high school students. And she was saying how it's important to have that they have the video on because she needs to see their faces to like read if they're understanding it.
Yeah.
And
that's a good point.
And she said it's frustrating because they turn the videos off. And then I said, why don't you say like you lose participation points if you don't have your video on? And she's like, I do say that, but they just don't care. Like And it's honestly, like, I don't know, do we blame, like, if I were in school right now and having to do everything mm-hmm. virtually, I wouldn't care either, honestly. Like, yeah. I would want to not have my video. Like, this is just such a hard time for everyone. And I think we forget about the students. Like, we're thinking, mm-hmm. for sure, it's a hard time for teachers, but it's a hard time to be a student too.
Yeah.
Of all ages, elementary school to like PhD students, all of them, it's a really hard time. Because I know like what got me through grad school was my peers.
Yep.
You know, and they don't really have that. Everything is all virtual, and they must really be missing that piece. So
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's the whole thing is hard and different, and the learning curve is pretty great. Even though we're pretty comfortable with technology now, we're all still very reliant on that personal piece too. And that kind of gets taken away when everything is virtual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, that could be that's a whole nother topic. But cool. Well, that's all I got.
Yeah, that's all I got. And you know, speaking of other topics, if anyone listening has a topic that they're interested in hearing, mm-hmm. Hearing more about, let us know. Cause we have a list of ideas, but you know, we're going to run out of ideas at some point. So we would love to hear what all of you think. Yes. What you would like to hear us discuss.
Right. Or just like what would be more interesting. I mean, obviously we want people to listen. So if you think it's, you know, I actually want to learn about this, or I want to understand mm-hmm. this, or we're going to do that because we want this to be useful in some way to people.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's fun, it should also be like educational in some way.
Right. Right.
So
right. Thank you everyone for listening.
Yes, thank you so much for tuning in. There will be more episodes to come, and we'll get better at this the more we do it. But we really appreciate it. Give us any comments, criticism, yes, feedback, anything. Yeah.
We'd love your feedback. Like we mentioned at the beginning, constructive criticism is always welcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Emily, it's been fun as always.
For sure.
All right,
talk
everyone.
Talk to you later.
Take care. Stay safe. Wear your mask.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.